Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
A militant organization claims responsibility for an attack on the Somali Parliament building. The president of Malawi tries to nullify this week's election. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. At least 8 people are dead following an attack today on the Somali Parliament building in Mogadishu. The Al-Shabaab group has claimed responsibility for the attack that was carried out by suicide commandos. Some lawmakers were inside of the building at the time of the attack. Members of Parliament tell VOA at least 3 of their colleagues were wounded. In Malawi, President Joyce Banda says she has annulled this week's general election due to ballot box irregularities, but election officials immediately challenged her decision. President Banda said her authority under the Constitution allows her to nullify the vote. At a news conference today, she said multiple incidents of ballot tampering and voters casting extra ballots prompted her decision. Ms. Banda called for a new election within 90 days, but said she was ending her own presidential candidacy. News reports quote the chief of the country's election commission as saying the process of counting votes from last Tuesday's election will continue because the president does not have the power to end the vote in this way. The government of Mali and separatist Tuareg groups have reached a ceasefire agreement following fighting this week that threatened to plunge the country back into war. The accord was reached after a meeting between rebels and the African Union in northern Mali. Thailand's coup leaders say ousted Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat and dozens of other former top officials are being held in a safe place and could be detained for up to a week to, quoting now, give them time to think. A military spokesman told a news conference today that the action was taken to relieve pressure and to achieve a political compromise between the government and anti-government protesters. The whereabouts of the detainees remain unclear Saturday, nearly 2 days after the Thai army announced its takeover. As the news conference was being held, demonstrations against the coup broke out across Bangkok despite a curfew and a limit to the number of people who can gather in one place. A Pakistani official says Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif will attend Monday's inauguration ceremony for India's Prime Minister-designate Narendra Modi. A statement from Mr. Sharif's office on Saturday said India had invited the Prime Minister to attend the ceremony. The Pakistani leader's attendance at the inauguration of an Indian counterpart will be the first ever between the two nations. Ukraine's interim prime minister addressed the country today on the eve of a crucial presidential election. Arseniy Yatsenyuk said Ukrainians will not allow what he called bandits sponsored by abroad to disrupt elections, an obvious reference to Russia's backing of pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine. His comments came a day after Russian President Vladimir Putin vowed to recognize the outcome of the election while voicing hope that Ukraine's new president will end military operations against separatists in the east. Pope Francis is calling for an end to the civil war in Syria. He arrived in Jordan today to begin a 3-day Middle East tour. In an opening speech, the Pope encouraged Jordanian officials to continue to seek lasting peace for the entire region. He said that goal urgently requires a peaceful solution to the crisis in Syria, as well as a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. U.S. President Barack Obama says America has a sacred trust to take care of its military veterans. In his weekly address today, Mr. Obama said the country must work harder to make sure veterans get the opportunities and benefits they have earned.
Most of all, let's keep working to make sure that our country upholds our sacred trust to all who've served. In recent weeks, we've seen again how much more our nation has to do to make sure all our veterans get the care they deserve.
Mr. Obama is facing growing pressure over allegations of treatment delays and preventable deaths at Veterans Affairs hospitals. The address aired during the Memorial Day holiday weekend when Americans honor their war dead. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening. This is Nightline Africa. Welcome to we're coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Mpuga.
And I'm Odette Fraser. Thanks for joining us.
All of a sudden, we just heard a loud bang. And a minute later, the gunfight ensued, and then we all tried to get out. And thank God, you know, most of us made it out.
Al-Shabaab claims responsibility for an attack on Somali parliament.
It says the president shall provide executive leadership in the interest of national unity in accordance with this constitution and the laws of the republic.
Malawi President Joyce Banda orders the nullification of presidential and parliamentary election results.
We're supporting the public health centers, the primary health care centers around the town in terms of training to quickly identify cases that present to them, to refer them on to the centers for treatment.
And we look at efforts to contain a cholera outbreak in conflict-torn South Sudan. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa.
Somalia's Al-Shabaab militants have claimed responsibility for a complex attack Saturday on the country's parliament building. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports at least 8 people were killed in the attack, though the number could rise.
Officials say the militants set off a car bomb at the main gate of the parliament complex in central Mogadishu, where members of parliament were meeting. Witnesses say the blast was followed by several smaller explosions and gunfire. Member of Parliament Hussein Arab Issab tells VOA members were listening to a speech on the floor of the Assembly Hall when the attack began.
All of a sudden, we just heard a loud bang. And a minute later, the gunfight ensued. And then we all tried to get out. And thank God, you know, most of us made it out.
Issa said he and fellow lawmakers were able to escape by breaking through a back wall of the dilapidated parliament building, still being repaired following years of warfare that destroyed much of the city. Silas Ntugarirwa, force commander for the African Union peacekeeping mission AMISOM, speaking from the scene of the attack, said all the lawmakers made it out alive and that the situation is under AMISOM control. The attack resembles another in February targeting the presidential compound in Mogadishu, known as Villa Somalia, in which 12 people were killed, including the attackers. Issa, who is also the chair of the Parliamentary Defense Committee, said security officials have known for weeks of a potential attack on Parliament.
The Internal Security Committee gave a report that the Parliament was the next target and something will happen in the near future. That we need to do something about it, we need to tighten security, and apparently it wasn't taken seriously.
Somali Prime Minister Abdulwali Sheikh Ahmed praised the response of the Somali National Army and African Union peacekeepers against what he called a cowardly attack. United Nations Special Envoy to Somalia, Nick Kaye, called the incident an attack against the people of Somalia for which there can be no justification. The militants have been pushed out of their major strongholds in Mogadishu and southern and central Somalia during the past 3 years under military pressure from Somali and AU forces. But the group has continued to launch targeted attacks in Somalia and has vowed to turn more of its attention to neighboring Kenya. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Mali, up to 20 soldiers were killed and 30 wounded in a failed attempt by government forces to retake the Tuareg separatist stronghold of Kidal. Tuareg separatists said on Thursday they had seized control of several towns in northern Mali, but they are ready to respect calls for a ceasefire. For more perspective, VOA's Vincent Makori spoke with Kumba Makalu, Director of Communications at the Coalition for Democracy Education in Mali.
I think when the current Prime Minister Moussa Mara visited Kidal, he challenged the MNLA basically by saying, I will come up to your occupied territory and speak. And they resented that. And the minute he stepped there, they started attacking. And this problem has not been contained. I mean, MNLA still has a strong presence in the northern part of Mali.
There was a peace agreement, or at least that was supposed to hold as issues are being resolved. What is it that has undermined that peace process?
Well, there haven't been peace talks. There hasn't been an agreement reached, really, of what's going to happen with the northern parts of Mali. We are still occupied by invaders, and armed invaders and dangerous invaders. So as long as they're in that territory, there's truly no peace in Mali. As we've seen now, they can attack at any time, and we're defenseless.
But at the same time, you know, some will say the authorities, the governor of Kidal, for example, is seen to be kind of in control of his area, and there is some element of support from that area. So how do you deal with that? Kind of there's local support for some kind of a separatist movement, but at the same time, the government in Bamako doesn't think there should be any separatist movement.
No, I mean, this is our land. They've come in by force, and you can't just invade a country and say, we're going to have our own sovereignty in your country. That's just unacceptable. And even if they've been tolerated and there's been a ceasefire, there's been a peace agreement, the ultimate goal is for Mali to regain its entire
sovereignty. But, you know, there was, of course, an invasion of fighters from outside, but the other members of the Tuareg communities are also inhabitants of northern Mali.
Yes.
They're not all from outside.
They're not all, but recently the MNLA has also regrouped with those Islamic groups from the outside in terms of, you know, unity against the Malian population. So if they're separating themselves by choice from Mali, that's something that Malian government has no control over.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, they have declared that even though they are Tuaregs from Mali, they don't accept to be part of the Malian government that is established.
Mm-hmm. Now, they say they're willing to observe a ceasefire, which, of course, would be assumed would lead to some kind of peace talks.
Mm-hmm.
Question is, what's the way forward? What is it that must be done in order to restore peace to Kidal?
We have to negotiate now. There's nothing to be done. We have to get allies, our support from the United Nations, from France, from any allied group, neighboring countries. And, you know, we have to get these MNLA representatives to talk and to have a concrete plan to move out of the situation. We need to negotiate.
Yes, very quickly. The international troops there, the French and others, are they playing any major role in maintaining peace?
Well, they're there basically to monitor what's going on. They did not intervene when MNLA attacked the Malian troops. Now they're helping with the wounded. They're not really active in participating in any fighting.
Kumba Makalu is the Director of Communications at the Coalition for Democracy Education in Mali. She was speaking with Vincent Makori from our studios in Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, the government of Mali and separatist Tuareg groups have reached a ceasefire agreement following clashes this week that threatened to plunge the country back into war. The deal was reached after a meeting between the rebels and the African Union in northern Mali.
South African President Jacob Zuma was sworn in for a second five-year term Saturday at a pomp-filled event attended by thousands from across the country. Dozens of foreign dignitaries representing countries around the African continent also attended, but on the streets, South Africans expressed mixed opinions about five more years in office for a leader who has been embroiled in corruption scandals since first taking office. For VOA News, Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
It was a spectacular and colorful ceremony as dozens of sitting heads of state, over 100 ambassadors representing various countries, and thousands of South Africans gathered at the Union Buildings in Pretoria on Saturday to witness the inauguration of President Jacob Zuma. Mr. Zuma began his second term following his ruling African National Congress's ANC 62% win in recent national elections. It was an electrifying atmosphere with both dignitaries and ordinary folks expressing excitement to witness President Zuma's second inauguration. The official ceremony began with Jacob Zuma taking the oath of office in front of the country's Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng.
I, Jacob Gedleyihlekisa Zuma, swear that I will be faithful to the Republic of South Africa, so help me God.
Then it was time for the military to salute Mr. Zuma with a 21-gun salute and a series of flybys in demonstration of their readiness to protect him and the nation at large. And in his inauguration speech, President Zuma did his best not to disappoint those who have put him in power.
This second phase will involve the implementation of radical social economic transformation.
Mr. Zuma began his final term in the midst of scandals. Parliament is set to consider a report that alleges millions of dollars in state funds were used for developments at his private rural Nkandla home. The official opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, DA, is fighting for the reinstatement of over 800 corruption, tax evasion and money laundering charges against Mr. Zuma that have been dropped. But his ruling ANC government has delivered free houses, education, electricity and social grants to millions of the poor. As a result, his inauguration attracted mixed reactions from South Africans. Elizabeth Baleni, who did not bother to attend the inauguration ceremony in Pretoria, says Zuma's second term in office spells doom for South Africa.
This will mean that more state money spent for his private businesses, more wives at the expense of the state, and more corruption for him and his colleagues, more unemployment for youth, and a whole lot of things.
But others have showered praise on Zuma, saying his pro-poor policies have reduced poverty by a wide margin. 29-year-old Sam Mtetwa says re-electing President Zuma was the right thing to do.
I believe Zuma's installation will mean continuity and also give him a chance to finish some of the programs which he started, which he have not completed, like the National Development Plan.
Roger Southall, a professor of sociology and political analyst at Witwatersrand University in Johannesburg, told VOA that President Zuma faces a number of challenges.
There's going to be a lot of fires to put out throughout his presidency, and it could be quite stormy. I think we'll see a continuation of the extensive protests around the country, a mixture of economic growth and continuing political difficulties.
Many say the ball is now in Mr. Zuma's court to prove his critics wrong. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Malawi President Joyce Banda has ordered the nullification of presidential and parliamentary election results, citing what she says are irregularities. The president says the action is in accordance with constitutional power given to her, but legal experts say the law that President Banda has used is irrelevant. VOA's Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
President Banda said she has nullified the elections because of irregularities that have muddied results of the poll. She cited a number of complaints that the Malawi Electoral Commission has received.
I, Dr. Joyce Banda, President of the Republic of Malawi, in exercise of the public conferred.
She says that the President of Malawi, she is exercising the power conferred upon her in Section 88, Subsection 2 of the Malawi Constitution. She is therefore calling for the nullification of all ongoing processes in relation to the 2014 tripartite elections, including announcement and counting of the results. Speaking at a press conference at her state house in the capital, Lilongwe, on Saturday, President Banda called for fresh elections in 90 days, during which she said she will not run. However, legal experts have faulted the president's order as saying the section she has cited does not give her the power to nullify the election. Ejika Nyongolo is the constitutional lawyer at the University of Malawi.
My reaction is one of puzzlement, if you will allow me, because I'm reading this section here, and it says the president shall provide executive leadership in the interest of national unity in accordance with this constitution and the laws of the republic. So I'm really struggling to find how one can interpret that to give it gives the president specific powers to call off an election and call for a fresh election in 90 days.
Law Society of Malawi President Mandala Mambulasa also told journalists that there is nowhere in the laws of Malawi where the president is given powers to nullify elections. Voters went to the polls on Tuesday to choose a president, members of parliament, and the local councils. Long delays and ballot problems prompted authorities to extend voting in some areas into Wednesday and Thursday. Malawi Electoral Commission Chairperson Maxon Mendela declined to comment on the presidential order to reporters. He, however, directed the commission's staff at the National Tally Center to continue working. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, has scaled up its operation in conflict-torn South Sudan to contain a cholera outbreak. For VOA, Mohamed Yusuf reports.
More than 300 cholera cases have been recorded in South Sudan, and more people suspected to be suffering from the disease are waiting for their medical results. Brian Moller, head of the Doctors Without Borders mission in South Sudan, tells VOA that the group is providing assistance to the public health centres to treat the increasing number of cases. The phone line from Juba was of very poor quality.
We're supporting the public health centres.
He says we are supporting the public health centres, the primary health centres around the town, in terms of training to quickly identify the cases presented to them and then send the patients to the centres for treatment. Mola says MSF has begun constructing a cholera treatment centre in Gudela district, one of the areas most affected by the outbreak of the disease. In April, MSF vaccinated more than 10,000 displaced people against cholera in Malakal, Upper Nile State. The state capital has changed hands several times during more than 5 months of fighting between government and rebel forces. Humanitarian workers warn the situation is dire and may worsen as the rainy season hits. Hundreds of thousands of people in South Sudan are living in displaced persons camps, which are congested and lack clean water. Moller says MSF will make intensive efforts in the camps, schools and the wider population to cut the spread of the disease.
There are active measures in place at the moment to try and contain spread in terms of...
We are actively trying to change things in terms of public education and water treatment, he says. Schools will be closed down. That's an initiative taken by the government in order to avoid congestion of children in one place to break the spread of the disease. On Thursday, speaking at a donor conference in Norway, where the international community pledged more than $600 million in aid, the US Special Envoy to South Sudan and Sudan, Donald Booth, called on South Sudan's leaders to honor promises they made. The envoy said it was important for the people of South Sudan that the fighting stop so that humanitarian aid can reach the needy population and also address the political issues underlying the conflict. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The World Bank Group's International Finance Corporation, IFC, in partnership with the International Center for Development and Research, says it plans to offer low-cost private health insurance plans in Senegal as part of the region's first private co-pay pilot program. Tifeng Kren is an operations officer at IFC.
Current state of play in the world.
Sorry for that technical glitch we had. And now let's go to our next story.
Low-cost health insurance is about to be available to Senegal students and informal sector employees through a program partly supported by the World Bank. Nearly two-thirds of all Senegalese lack access to health insurance, and many fall into debt when faced with an unexpected illness or accident. Jennifer Lazuta has more for VOA from Dakar.
The World Bank Group's International Finance Corporation, IFC, in partnership with the International Center for Development and Research, says it plans to offer low-cost private health insurance plans in Senegal as part of the region's first private co-pay pilot program. Tifeng Kren is an operations officer at IFC.
The current state of play in most of West Africa is that private insurance companies can provide health insurance, but it's extremely expensive when you compare it to people's actual, the usual average incomes of people. About 65% of people do not have any health insurance coverage whatsoever.
In Senegal, only civil service employees or workers at companies with more than 50 employees are eligible to receive health care benefits. Kren said this means many people become reliant on loans to pay for unexpected health care costs.
One thing that we've seen over and over again is that what you would call a health shock, so some kind of serious illness or accident, completely wipes out family savings, or they even have to borrow money in order to pay health costs. So it makes people extremely vulnerable. All they need is one massive health shock, and it sends them back into complete precariousness, indebtedness.
The IFC says that it will work with six private Senegalese insurance companies to pool the costs of health risks and offer micro health care products at well below normal cost. Kren said that unlike other health care plans, which run between $500 and $600 a year in Senegal and are difficult to qualify for, the IFC program will offer plans as low as $16 per year. Plans that include hospital visits will cost a maximum of $60 per year. Students can gain access to basic health care and pharmacy services if they get injured at school or on the way to school for just $3 per year. In exchange for these yearly fees, participants will receive a health card that requires them to make a copayment of just 20% of normal treatment or medication costs. Kren said such a system could change the future of health care in Africa.
If it really works and if it can be replicated elsewhere, would really help to fill in the gaps, because, you know, governments are trying to provide some health services. Well, what do individual people do to have access to affordable health care? That's kind of a big part of missing in this picture. It could be a very important lesson, or, you know, for the region as a whole.
Kren said the pilot program initially plans to target around 108,000 people in Dakar during the first year. After that, the program will expand to Senegal's TS and San Luis regions, and hopefully soon after, into neighboring countries. Jennifer Lazuta for VOA News, Dakar.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
We'll be right back.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa.
And still to come in the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from the continent. That will be followed by a commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University.
And it's now time for our Saturday Music Spot, so sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Prophète Percy Kumbulu, merveille Matiankou, Sanisika le bourgeois,
Maman Boubola na kota o, Maman yo,
et c'est mon ami le boss
na kota na banda e, Maman yo, na kota na liya o,
Papi Moula, au vocalisme 12,
Mani yama beka boye le bola mon
dakou, Merci Kongolo, Serge Moutemona, Itelio
Abanda e, Chico Seba Lande,
Patrick Mouniomo,
Ibeni Tene,
Tonto Kalouti,
Na Junior Reata,
Freddy Ngoma,
Mimi Kiangani,
Merci Moutoulo,
Lampatio Boya Kale,
Adila, Maleme, Colonel da Silva Kassou, Evelyn Camon Lopez, Adena Kamoke, Dende, Talandena Takodendae, Milala Deda, Seigneur Bongongo, Misadaya Takodendae, Rimel Mivia, Leonard Yala, le roi de Bokao, Salomar Yana Kitambo, Salaka Charlie James, Sandika Songo, Alain Rubisa, Kamata, Fongola Nakota, Tadi Mambou Mbula Dibanda, Fongola Nakota, full business Angola Mongola na kota amigo chedi tabwanda oni yo mapeka boye lokola motoko wanga na kaliko
naite
wili gabana
naite naite
nasalio nini
naite persi tumba
nasalio nini
no se bigenda
kisha vule mana salio nini
naite
tops mami
naite naite
mama e
je m'en sens pas comme un panneau
pas comme un panneau
qui dit
affiche le champ
l'aura chité
affiche
le champ
voilà
affiche la tête
bisous.
Music is
muy tarde. Era maravilloso. Shut up, man. Shut up, man. Please shut up, man. I said shut up, man, man, man. Gauss, Kébé, très très fort. Président des Démoniato, président Patrick Camara. Yves Joli des Boucliers, Bonnie du son célèbre japonais, Malou des Bosquets. Bruno Bellico Portanova, Tabeli Bonzenga, DJ Celestino, Champion Joli et Sona, Chuchu Luango.
Bona Colini Cape, Balada Landa, Cotubasicala,
Bona
Mase, Bayaka, Balada Landa, Cotubasicala, Bona Bango, Pasone, Bayana Mbono, Bona Mase, Yo, 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 Yo,
Yo, Yo, Serge Kadilu,
Patrick Mouyaya, Mouyaya,
Mouyaya, Mouyaya,
Mouyaya, Mouyaya, Mouyaya, Mouyaya, Mouyaya, Mouyaya, Mouyaya,
Olivier Sono,
Mouyaya, 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 Mouyaya,
Pepe Matuba, Alino Chuba, Papi Boloa, Maître CD, Bokuta Pongo, Ivy Apomba, Olivier Masoudi. Arlette et Moussa Kansai. Ilanga mamo si simbi Christiana kwa salosi ya sasa Marie Rims kwa firme Majaki watunda Ana maiti di beti kapamba Pax Medina Mabolina nzombo Bebe senzo
Erite minimu Yonga moke tona Nema bobo bobo Chuna mingi na chakumundu
Encore et toujours fort là.
Gas mafina, Swiss mafina. Adel Manix Mosaka Patrick Zola Iget Mbabwa Zebomboyo Sule Matundu.
Abi telling boss.
Aye lele lele oh, Ashubiri lele lele oh. Aye lele lele oh, Ashubiri aye lele oh. Hey mama,
champagne.
Hey oh mama, champagne.
Say many.
Hey, yeah.
And I wonder about where she go.
Oh yeah,
I had to jump in my pima. She puts a van to Mukwano Kakana.
Hey,
send you one jawolo,
mwaho,
bosola ba. Send you one jawolo,
mwaho,
iwalio funyeko.
Jagala kuwanye naku. Jagana kuna zeka maziga
Kula kesanyu Ofune kusanyu
Kakana Omoroji kakana Kakana Kukunye yenze masita
Champagne Oh mama champagne
Shuri zekirize
Champagne Oh mama champagne
Kakana
Kakanyu mutima Gofunye sakusa tima Sakusa mbaliga Segola basi manyiri ya mbaliga Hey
Nze ndifea Banga sangala nubia Omuru ndigunu Pera shuma temolibia maziga kare Oh oh ah. Gondagala chukumi mwabiri Zekwagala bibiri mwabiri Gondagala bibiri mwasatu Zekwagala bitano mukaga
Champagne, oh
go, baby. No more fighting, no more crying, baby. I don't know why you take my heart and spirit away. You make me dizzy, your soft lips I can't deny. Hey, champagne, oh yeah, oh mama, champagne. Okuwanga Hennessy, champagne, hey, oh mama, champagne. Shot is a tequila, champagne, hey, oh mama, champagne. Come and give you more, champagne, hey, hey, oh mama. Oh my baby, come and give you more, champagne, hey, oh mama, champagne. Eddie Kenz and Episode, champagne, hey.
Eddie Kenzo with that song brings us to the end of tonight's music spot. And now the Saturday commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University in Washington. Here is Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. This week, what is coming to my attention is how plans are being made to address the question on the White House summit on Africa. There are a number of points to be brought to the attention to the American people and to the people of Africa. Number one, the White House summit is going to be a major development in addressing the urgency of dialogue between the United States and the African countries. The 47 nations that are invited for this summit must do everything within their power to operate effectively at the summit. They must get together and organize themselves before the summit. Governance, which is a key issue now reflected by the Boko Haram affair in Nigeria, and the inability of that government to deal with the local problem to the point that international organizations, UN and other agencies from the world might be recruited to add to this dialogue. So it makes sense to see to what extent we can raise the issue for the benefit of the African countries as they prepare for the dialogue with the United States. Most importantly, the Obama administration is being challenged to really engage the African countries more positively than ever before, because the end of the Cold War changed the narrative. Now, the emergence of the BRIC nations posed a serious development for the U.S. in its relationship with Africa. The African governments cannot engage the United States unless they come as a united group, and they must deal with the division in their ranks with regard to why some are invited and some are not invited. This is why the perennial question of good governance, democratic rule, human rights, and rights for the minorities come back to haunt us here. The question of the Boko Haram becomes very important once again, because here, America's concern for terrorism becomes an other big issue that is going to come when we have the summit. How are the Africans dealing with terrorism on their continent? We have the problem in Mali and the Tuaregs. We have the Somali problem and piracy in the Atlantic, in the Indian Ocean. We have the situation in North Africa because of the failure of the Arab Spring and the collapse of Muammar Gaddafi, who was actively involved in the African Union. All these issues together must be addressed as we move towards the summit. Then we come to the critical issue facing the African countries. The Boko Haram issue, which involved all those young women who were kidnapped, put all the leaders in Africa on the spot. Can you rule or not rule your states? Can you reconcile between military and civilian leadership? This is the problem of President Jonathan. And unfortunately for him, the fact that you have an incident in your own country, and for a variety of reasons, some may say it's cowardice, political cowardice. Actually, when some people compare him to Obasanjo, who confronted the Boko Haram, that charge may be made by some of his opponents. But truth be told, what must be done in Nigeria is that the Nigerian state has been in existence for over 60 years now, since independence in 1960. As a result, it becomes important for the military to be able to deal with social instability at home. And this is one of the reasons why, when we talk about the summit coming on soon, the question of military power, military ability to negotiate with civilian rule, to contain disturbances in the society, becomes important. And I end this discussion by focusing on the problem of how the Big Five, Sudan, South Africa, Ethiopia, DRC, and Nigeria, once upon a time, we used to make fun about the collapse of rule in DRC. Now, many people are beginning to see the relationship between what is happening in Nigeria under Jonathan and what has been going on in DRC even before Mobutu took over and even after Mobutu took over. This becomes very important for American policy. American policy is very much concerned now with terrorism. America is also concerned about markets. How can the summit prepare the way for the African leaders to engage America constructively? And they have to address the question of good governance, transparency, human rights, and in doing so, they will be in a better position to deal with a variety of groups in the United States. And this is where U.S. policy is going to be demanding more and more and more attention from the African leaders. The Boko Haram incident is unfortunate for the president of Nigeria, definitely sad for the political leadership in Nigeria, because if Nigeria is going to engage the U.S., there must be law and order, there must be stability, so that American businessmen will have sufficient evidence to put their money where their mouth is, not only in oil, but in other commercial enterprises in Nigeria. And that's the way it is today, until we look at events as they unravel in Nigeria and beyond.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America.
Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm Douglas Mpoga.
And I'm Odette Fraser. Have a good evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has joined with other donor nations to significantly increase humanitarian assistance to the people of South Sudan. The United States is committed to meeting the immediate needs of those affected by the conflict, including more than 1.3 million people who are displaced, as we work to end the conflict and the devastating toll that it has taken. More than 50 nations gathered in Oslo, Norway on May 19th and 20th, and pledged more than $618 million in additional humanitarian aid to help those displaced inside South Sudan, as well as those who have fled to neighboring countries. Of the total, the U.S. is contributing $290.6 million. The new U.S. funds will support a variety of humanitarian aid efforts, including ramping up the distribution of food items and specialty nutrition supplements for children suffering from malnutrition, and to address a looming famine. This new assistance will also address chronic food insecurity by providing seeds, tools, and agricultural training to help South Sudanese farmers restart their livelihoods. On the health front, the new U.S. assistance will help prevent the spread of disease by providing safe drinking water, latrines, and training on safe hygiene practices. Emergency health services will be expanded, both in South Sudan and in neighboring countries that are hosting refugees from the conflict. Construction of camps and nutrition programs will be aided in those nations as well. That said, the new U.S. assistance and that of our international partners can only be effective if the parties to the conflict stop their fighting and remove all obstacles to the delivery of this life-saving effort. It is crucial that both sides implement the May 9th agreement to end the violence and allow immediate, full, and unconditional access to the United Nations and humanitarian organizations to reach those in need.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.